Chapter 43. King Mehevi allusion to his eye and majesty, conduct of Marheyo and Mehevi in certain delicate matters, peculiar system of marriage, number of population, uniformity, embalming, places of sepulture, funeral obsequies at Nukahiva, number of inhabitants and IP location of the dwellings, happiness enjoyed in the valley, a warning, some ideas with regard to the present state of the Aiyans, story of a missionary's wife, fashionable equipages at Oahu, reflections, King Mehevi. A goodly sounding title, and why should I not bestow it upon the foremost man in the valley of Taipei? The Republican missionaries of Oahu caused to be gazetted in the court journal, published at Honolulu, the most trivial movement of His Gracious Majesty King Kamehameha III, and their highnesses the princes of the blood royal. And who is His Gracious Majesty, and what the quality of this blood royal? His Gracious Majesty is a fat, lazy, negro-looking blockhead, with as little character as power. He has lost the noble traits of the barbarian, without acquiring the redeeming graces of a civilized being, and, although a member of the Aiyan Temperance Society, is a most inveterate dram drinker. Accounts like these are sometimes copied in two English and American journals. They lead the reader to infer that the arts and customs of civilized life are rapidly refining the natives of the Sandwich Islands. But let no one be deceived by these accounts. The chiefs swagger about in gold lace and broadcloth, while the great mass of the common people are nearly as primitive in their appearance as in the days of Cook. In the progress of events at these islands, the two classes are receding from each other. The chiefs are daily becoming more luxurious and extravagant in their style of living, and the common people more and more destitute of the necessaries and decencies of life. But the end to which both will arrive at last will be the same. The one are fast destroying themselves by sensual indulgences, and the other are fast being destroyed by a complication of disorders and the want of wholesome food. The resources of the domineering chiefs are wrung from the starving serfs, and every additional bauble with which they bedeck themselves is purchased by the sufferings of their bondsmen, so that the measure of juga refinement attained by the chiefs is only an index to the actual state in which the greater portion of the population lie groveling. The blood royal is an extremely thick, depraved fluid, formed principally of raw fish, bad brandy, and European sweetmeats, and discharged with a variety of eruptive humors, which are developed in sundry blotches and pimples upon the august face of majesty itself, and the angelic countenances of the princes and princesses of the blood royal. Now, if the farcical puppet of a chief magistrate in the Sandwich Islands be allowed the title of king, why should it be withheld from the noble savage Mehevi, who is a thousand times more worthy of the appellation? All hail, therefore, Mehevi, king of the Cannibal Valley, and long life and prosperity to his Taiping Majesty. May heaven for many a year preserve him, the uncompromising foe of Nukahiva and the French, if a hostile attitude will secure his lovely domain from the remorseless inflictions of South Sea civilization. Previously to seeing the dancing widows, I had little idea that there were any matrimonial relations subsisting in Taipei, and I should as soon have thought of a platonic affection being cultivated between the sexes as of the solemn connection of man and wife. To be sure, there were old Marheyo and Tyner, who seemed to have a sort of nuptial understanding with one another. But for all that, I had sometimes observed a comical-looking old gentleman dressed in a suit of shabby tattooing, who had the audacity to take various liberties with the lady, and that too in the very presence of the old warrior her husband, who looked on as good-naturedly, as if nothing was happening. This behavior, until subsequent discoveries enlightened me, puzzled me more than anything else I witnessed in Taipei. As for Mehevi, I had supposed him a confirmed bachelor, as well as most of the principal chiefs. At any rate, if they had wives and families, they ought to have been ashamed of themselves. for sure I am. They never troubled themselves about any domestic affairs. In truth, Mehev, I seemed to be the president of a club of hardy fellows, who kept bachelor's hall in fine style at the tea. I had no doubt, but that they regarded children as odious encumbrances, and their ideas of domestic felicity were sufficiently shown in the fact that they allowed no meddlesome housekeepers to turn topsy-turvy those snug little arrangements they had made in their comfortable dwelling. I strongly suspected, however, that some of these jolly bachelors were carrying on love intrigues with the maidens of the tribe, although they did not appear publicly to acknowledge them. I happened to pop upon Mehevi 3 or 4 times when he was romping in a most undignified manner for a warrior king with one of the prettiest little witches in the valley. She lived with an old woman and a young man in a house near Marheyo's, and although in appearance a mere child herself, had a noble boy about a year old, who bore a marvelous resemblance to Mehevi, whom I should certainly have believed to have been the father, were it not that the little fellow had no triangle on his face. But on second thoughts, tattooing is not hereditary. Mehevi, however, was not the only person upon whom the damsel Munani smiled. The young fellow of 15, who permanently resided in the home with her, was decidedly in her good graces. I sometimes beheld both him and the chief making love at the same time. Is it possible, thought I, that the valiant warrior can consent to give up a corner in the thing he loves? This too was a mystery which, with others of the same kind, was afterwards satisfactorily explained. During the second day of the Feast of Calabashes, Cory being determined that I should have some understanding on these matters, had, in the course of his explanations, directed my attention to a peculiarity I had frequently remarked among many of the females, principally those of a mature age and rather matronly appearance. This consisted in having the right hand and the left foot most elaborately tattooed, whilst the rest of the body was wholly free from the operation of the art, with the exception of the minutely dotted lips and slight marks on the shoulders, to which I have previously referred as comprising the sole tattooing exhibited by Feiwei, in common with other young girls of her age. The hand and foot thus embellished were, according to Cory, the distinguishing badge of wedlock, so far as that social and highly commendable institution is known among those people. It answers, indeed, the same purpose as the plain gold ring worn by our fairer spouses. After Cory's explanation of the subject, I was for some time studiously respectful in the presence of all females thus distinguished, and never ventured to indulge in the slightest approach to flirtation with any of their number. Married women, to be sure, I knew better than to offend them. A further insight, however, into the peculiar domestic customs of the inmates of the valley did away in a measure with the severity of my scruples, and convinced me that I was deceived in some at least of my conclusions. A regular system of polygamy exists among the islanders, but of a most extraordinary nature, a plurality of husbands instead of wives. And this solitary fact speaks volumes for the gentle disposition of the male population. Where else, indeed, could such a practice exist, even for a single day? Imagine a revolution brought about in a Turkish seraglio, and the harem rendered the abode of bearded men, or conceive some beautiful woman in our own country running distracted at the sight of her numerous lovers murdering one another before her eyes, out of jealousy for the unequal distribution of her favors. Heaven defend us from such a state of things. We are scarcely amiable and forbearing enough to submit to it. I was not able to learn what particular ceremony was observed in forming the marriage contract, but am inclined to think that it must have been of a very simple nature. Perhaps the mere popping the question, as it is termed with us, might have been followed by an immediate nuptial alliance. At any rate, I have more than one reason to believe that tedious courtships are unknown in the Valley of Taipei. The males considerably outnumber the females. This holds true of many of the islands of Polynesia, although the reverse of what is the case in most civilized countries. The girls are first wooed and won, at a very tender age, by some stripling in the household in which they reside. This, however, is a mere frolic of the affections, and no formal engagement is contracted. By the time this first love has a little subsided, a second suitor presents himself, of graver years, and carries both boy and girl away to his own habitation. This disinterested and generous-hearted fellow now weds the young couple, marrying damsel and lover at the same time, and all three thenceforth live together as harmoniously as so many turtles. I have heard of some men who in civilized countries rashly marry large families with their wives, but had no idea that there was any place where people married supplementary husbands with them. Infidelity on either side is very rare. No man has more than one wife, and no wife of mature years has less than two husbands. Sometimes she has three, but such instances are not frequent. The marriage tie, whatever it may be, does not appear to be indissoluble, for separations occasionally happen. These, however, when they do take place, produce no unhappiness, and are preceded by no bickerings. For the simple reason that an ill-used wife or a henpecked husband is not obliged to file a bill in chancery to obtain a divorce. As nothing stands in the way of a separation, the matrimonial yoke sits easily and lightly, and a type wife lives on very pleasant and sociable terms with her husband. On the whole, wedlock, as known among these types, seems to be of a more distinct and enduring nature than is usually the case with barbarous people. A baneful promiscuous intercourse of the sexes is hereby avoided, and virtue, without being clamorously invoked, is, as it were, unconsciously practiced. The contrast exhibited between the Marquesas and other islands of the Pacific in this respect is worthy of being noticed. At Tahiti the marriage tie was altogether unknown, and the relation of husband and wife, father and son, could hardly be said to exist. The Ariary Society, one of the most singular institutions that ever existed in any part of the world, spread universal licentiousness over the island. It was the voluptuous character of these people which rendered the disease introduced among them by de Bougainville's ships, in 1768, doubly destructive. It visited them like a plague, sweeping them off by hundreds. Notwithstanding the existence of wedlock among the types, the scriptural injunction to increase and multiply seems to be but indifferently attended to. I never saw any of those large families in arithmetical or stepladder progression which one often meets with at home. I never knew of more than two youngsters living together in the same home, and but seldom even that number. As for the women, it was very plain that the anxieties of the nursery but seldom disturbed the serenity of their souls, and they were never seen going about the valley with half a score of little ones tagging at their apron strings, or rather at the breadfruit leaf they usually wore in the rear. The ratio of increase among all the Polynesian nations is very small, and in some places as yet uncorrupted by intercourse with Europeans, the births would appear not very little to outnumber the deaths, the population in such instances remaining nearly the same for several successive generations, even upon those islands seldom or never desolated by wars, and among people with whom the crime of infanticide is altogether unknown. This would seem expressively ordained by Providence to prevent the overstocking of the islands with a race too indolent to cultivate the ground, and who, for that reason alone, would, by any considerable increase in their numbers, be exposed to the most deplorable misery. During the entire period of my stay in the Valley of Taipei, I never saw more than 10 or 12 children under the age of 6 months, and only became aware of 2 births. It is to the absence of the marriage tie that the late rapid decrease of the population of the Sandwich Islands and of Tahiti is in part to be ascribed. the vices and diseases introduced among these unhappy people annually swell the ordinary mortality of the islands, while, from the same cause, the originally small number of births is proportionally decreased. Thus the progress of the Aeans and Tahitians to utter extinction is accelerated in a sort of compound ratio. I have before had occasion to remark that I never saw any of the ordinary signs of a pace of sepulture in the valley, a circumstance which I attributed, at the time, to my living in a particular part of it, and being forbidden to extend my rambles to any considerable distance towards the sea. I have since thought it probable, however, that the Typees, either desirous of removing from their sight the evidences of mortality, or prompted by a taste for rural beauty, may have some charming cemetery situation in the shadowy recesses along the base of the mountains. At Nukihiva, two or three large quadrangular pipices, heavily flagged, enclosed with regular stone walls, and shaded over and almost hidden from view by the interlacing branches of enormous trees, were pointed out to me as burial places. The bodies, I understood, were deposited in root vaults beneath the flagging, and were suffered to remain there without being disinterred. Although nothing could be more strange and gloomy than the aspect of these places, where the lofty trees threw their dark shadows over rude blocks of stone, a stranger looking at them would have discerned none of the ordinary evidences of a place of sepulture. During my stay in the valley, as none of its inmates were so accommodating as to die and be buried in order to gratify my curiosity with regard to their funeral rites, I was reluctantly obliged to remain in ignorance of them. As I have reason to believe, however, the observances of the Typees in these matters are the same with those of all the other tribes in the island, I will here relate a scene I chanced to witness at Nukihiva. A young man had died, about daybreak, in a house near the beach. I had been sent ashore that morning, and saw a good deal of the preparations they were making for his obsequies. The body, neatly wrapped in a new white tappa, was laid out in an open shed of coconut boughs, upon a bier constructed of elastic bamboos ingeniously twisted together. This was supported about 2 feet from the ground, by large canes planted uprightly in the earth. Two females, of a dejected appearance, watched by its side, plaintively chanting and beating the air with large grass fans whitened with pipe clay. In the dwelling house adjoining the numerous company we assembled, and various articles of food were being prepared for consumption. Two or three individuals, distinguished by headdresses of beautiful tappa, and wearing a great number of ornaments, appeared to officiate as masters of the ceremonies. By noon the entertainment had fairly begun, and we were told that it would last during the whole of the two following days. With the exception of those who mourned by the corpse, everyone seemed disposed to drown the sense of the late bereavement in convivial indulgence. The girls, decked out in their savage finery, danced, the old men chanted, the warriors smoked and chatted, and the young and lusty, of both sexes, feasted plentifully, and seemed to enjoy themselves as pleasantly as they could have done, had it been a wedding. The islanders understand the art of embalming, and practice it with such success, that the bodies of their great chiefs are frequently preserved for many years in the very houses where they died. I saw three of these in my visit to the Bay of Tyre. One was enveloped in immense folds of tappa, with only the face exposed, and hung erect against the side of the dwelling. The others were stretched out upon biers of bamboo, in open, elevated temples, which seemed consecrated to their memory. The heads of enemies killed in battle are invariably preserved, and hung up as Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.